The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining another episode of We the People. We are a smaller people today, however, because Bill is sick. He would have sounded like, he didn't even sound like Marge Simpson. He was sort of beyond that. It wasn't great, so we decided not to have him come in and pollute the world. So it's just...
He's not his usual sick self. He's actually ill.
Yeah, he's actually ill. And when we've been gone for 2 weeks, I really had to apologize to people. We had stuff. We just had...
Oh, wait, no one knows you were gone for 2 weeks.
Scheduling problem we did because we weren't on the chat room. People were bugged.
Oh.
So we pre-recorded the past 2 weeks, and we've been busy bees. Lots going on. Anyway, we're having a huge change here on our program today, a little bit, first hour. We were going to finally get into the topic of Dr. Kate Vandermoor, who basically is pretending to be a conservative advisor to the people in the irrigators in Montana, and she's doing a radio program and all this stuff. And I think if you look into her background, it doesn't add up. A lot of stuff doesn't add up, so we're in the business of taking care of things that don't add up. And we have a ton of information on the website, which is wethepeopleradio.us. And I guess we'll go backwards. Bill's not here to say, who are we? So my name's Aaron Ryan, and Bill Cundiff is out sick, so, you know, we won't talk about him anymore. And we have our engineer, our handy-dandy engineer who does all of our music, Bob Martin.
Don't worry, I was going to tell him who you were if you didn't.
Yeah, I could see you looking at me, and I'm like, why is he trying to put words in my mouth? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. So let's see, we air Sundays noon to 2 here at KCNR on Sunday afternoons.
On the left coast.
On the left coast, yeah, you know, the blue coast. So depressing. Every time they show some statistic, it's always rough on campaign years because they show statistics of people who can't figure stuff out, and it's always us. So embarrassing. It was kind of funny, though. So anyway, and then Mondays, we are 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time in Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. So there you go. You have
in
lots
the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, sort of. So second hour here, we have Trevor Loudon, and that's all set. Nothing changed there. But our operative, who's talking about our operative, I guess our intel person, had an emergency today, a national emergency, as a matter of fact. So I hope you're all home and safe and all that kind of stuff. So there's stuff going on out there. We'll have to chat with her next week and get the full 411 on Dr. Kate. So anyway, I'll be making changes to the website while we're talking. If you're listening here on Sunday, the chat room will be up and running. And I know Bill is sick, but his fingers still work, so he'll be chatting. He'll be in charge of the chat today. Let's see, what else? Any other housekeeping?
With any luck, we won't find out what the national emergency is.
Exactly, because it will be averted and nobody will be the wiser. So we have commandeered Lawrence Kogan, a.k.a. Larry, who is an attorney in New Jersey. Are you in New Jersey or New York, Larry? You're in New Jersey, aren't
you? New York, New Jersey, D.C.
Yeah, I knew you were kind of all over the place. Where are you in real life?
I am in New York.
Yeah, okay.
And New Jersey and D.C. in real life.
That's what I thought. And Montana sometimes, too, because I know you've been working on
and Oregon and California.
Some of these issues which intersect with all the things we've been talking about with dams and Indian tribes and sovereignty and water rights and all that good stuff. We've done tons of shows on all these, so I do hope that if people are either just tuning in for the first time or you've been away for a while, go to wethepeopleradio.us. And you'll find not only the archives of programs, but you'll find all the information about those shows, which actually next week will be really important because there's a ton of information. So today you'll have to refresh your page as we go because we're going to be adding different things because we're having a different conversation, which is fine. All right. All my disclaimers being said. All right, Mr. Kogan. So you've been working on the flathead reservation up there, and Kerr Dam, right? Is it Kerr Dam?
Yes.
Am I dams confused?
It was Kerr Dam, and then the tribe changed it to a name that nobody can pronounce.
That's why I can't remember.
It's a foreign language. We don't know what it says.
Ah, that's fun. And what was it? What's the second dam in real life?
Well, that is the main dam that was conveyed to the tribes on September 5.
But there were two, right? And it was
there's a bigger dam upstream from that that's twice the size, called the Hungry Horse Dam.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
That one is still in the hands of the government, at least overtly.
Okay. And we had, I don't remember when we had this conversation with you. It's been a couple of months ago, and we were also talking about, you know, this whole thing with tribal sovereignty and how that's how that's working out for everybody else. We've had recent developments, though, in the, was it Senator House this last week?
I think it was in the House of Representatives.
I think so, too. And it was a ruling that allowed tribes to be exempt from prevailing wage and that sort of thing. Do you know more about
that? There was a House bill that was sponsored by Montana's only congressman. I think you have one congressman for every 700,000 voters that are residents of a state when they do the census. And there's only a million people in the state, so they didn't quite get one in the third congressman. But this congressman, based on what he's doing, is really less than a person. So, in a nutshell, what he has done found another way to expand tribal sovereignty through regulatory waiver. Under the notion of federally recognized tribes, the federal government usually, through its agencies, excuse tribes from following normal regulatory requirements wherever it's possible. It's one way of giving back reparations for all the bad deeds that the federal government had imposed upon the tribes over the course of the last 150 years. And in this case, the tribes are now permitted, because of Representative Ryan Zinke from Montana, to now avert the need to follow National Labor Relations Board rules if they have employees that otherwise would be subject to union requirements. So imagine a tribe, for instance, out in another part of the country with a casino. They have a whole big union labor force. Now they don't have to follow union rules. And if you have other than union labor force, you know, you never have to follow union rules. So you don't have to be like the big auto company subject to a union takeover.
Sure. What was his thought process behind that? I mean,
money.
I know. Okay.
Votes and money.
Pretty straightforward.
Now, one must say about Representative Ryan Zinke is that he is a Gulf War hero. I mean, he did serve on SEAL Team 6, and he did protect the front door of our nation from terrorists. But by granting the tribes greater sovereignty within the borders of our country here at home, he has effectively left the back door open. And there's a lot of things that could happen on tribal reservations that are deemed sovereign nations. But he doesn't want to address that issue because he's getting lots of votes and money from the tribes.
And so when, that's obviously not the argument that he made to...
Well, of course not. He won't address the issues. I did meet him once at the Salt Lake City Airport, and we had an exchange together then. And I got to tell you, he thinks he's Joe Willie Namath.
For our younger listeners, who's a football player. So, interesting. Okay, so what does that mean? Okay, so for people who live in a town and don't have an Indian reservation near them and don't live near a dam and all those kinds of things, what does this mean for your average taxpayer?
It won't affect your average taxpayer directly unless they live anywhere near a reservation. But, you know, Representative Zinke's predecessors and other members of Congress 3 years ago signed another law that could result in risks to people all over the country that live within vicinities of reservations because they passed a law that allows federally recognized tribes to lease reservation lands, which are federal lands held in trust for the tribes, for up to 75 years to anybody that wants to pay the money to undertake a business activity on reservation. That includes domestic citizens and companies, and it also includes foreigners. So if you have a foreign business enterprise that comes on the reservation that wants to sprinkle money on the tribe, they can be coming from anywhere in the world, including from the Middle East.
I was going to say, we kind of got into this with you last time a little bit, but we really didn't explore the whole subject, and that is I learned a lot more afterward, but I thought you should share that with folks.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because on the one hand, everyone sees in the news these days that there are many thousands of refugees coming in from the Middle East under the infinite wisdom of President Obama's humanitarian program. Unfortunately, though, they're not adequately vetted. And yes, there are, most of these people are designated as authentic refugees through a vetting process. But the vetting process is not adequate enough to determine whether among these refugees there are potential terrorists coming from countries and from groups deemed terrorist organizations or a country supporting terrorist organizations.
Sure.
Now, some such countries include Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, perhaps, maybe even Turkey. Turkey has been known to harbor Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas, Hezbollah, and other groups, even though they're a NATO ally on paper.
Sure. And they're these guys are allowed to do all sorts of different things with minerals. Are we at break time, Bob? I just looked at the clock. I'm trying to get better at that.
No, they can't touch minerals under these leasing rules. That is the only exception. They can't extract anything from the earth.
Okay, that's
without Bureau of Indian Affairs oversight and vetting.
Okay. When we come back, let's chat a little bit more about that, because we got into some things with you on our previous program, which I will link here swiftly on the break. I'm typing as quickly as I can. You can find all that shortly at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll return with Larry Kogan in a couple of minutes.
Took away our ways of life. The tomahawk and the bowie knife. Took away our native tongue. And taught their English to our young. Days made in Japan. Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud you live, so proud you die.
And so we owe them everything now. Bottom line is, and for that reason, we must give away the farm. It is a sovereignty issue, though, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I also want to bring into context why we're talking about Turkey at all. And because we had filed a lawsuit, as you recall, we had discussed in our last time together, that was challenging the Kur Dam transfer to the tribe, the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribe of the Flathead Indian Reservation in northwestern Montana, and that's where all that came up. We had a public filing in the federal district court in Washington, D.C., that had alleged, among other things, that because of all of this tribal self-governance and tribal sovereignty resulting in regulatory waivers from normal rules that, you know, owners of dams had to follow or prospective owners of dams had to follow in connection with the transfer, the tribes were not required to follow those rules, and as a result, dam safety issues remain unaccounted for, and the fact that the reservations could be leased at foreign parties, including Turkey, which had lobbied that law initially for its own enterprises, and the fact that there was uranium all around the reservation but not on it, these were all issues that we raised in our filing, and that's why we brought it up. So it's a matter of public record for anyone to go see.
Okay, and with uranium all around it but not on the reservation, what does that actually...
Well, the interesting thing was that the tribe, as a matter of its own business, is specializing in part in cleaning up uranium tailing spills that happen on different military bases. So they're skilled in handling uranium. Mm. And the question is, you know, what was Turkey's motivation for choosing the CSKT tribe and its reservation for doing business among, you know, 13 other tribes around the country, each of which are located within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant, a nuclear fuel facility, or uranium mines. So that was something we raised in our public filing. And yes, it did pique interest of all types of media sources, including Al Jazeera.
And did they just had questions, or they...
They wanted to interview us, and we politely declined because by that time we had withdrawn the lawsuit because of all the intimidation had forced our clients to withdraw.
Oh,
media went after them, linking them to tinfoil hats and vast conspiracy theories, and the State Department hammered us for alleging that Turkey, an erstwhile NATO ally, would ever do such a thing, and to tell you the truth, there's new information out there that would certainly refute what the State Department line was at that time.
Interesting. So where does it go, you know, where does the whole thing go from here?
Well, the whole point of federal tribal recognition by the Department of Interior is a vast enterprise which seeks to cede greater sovereignty to federally recognized tribes. One would have thought to get them off the government welfare payrolls. But really, what this seems to be is a way to create all new governmental entities among the 50 states. President Nixon originated this concept way back when, and it really had a very expansive plan to expand Indian tribal sovereignty as almost a challenge to the federalist system we now have. Right now, the federal government and the state governments work together in a shared jurisdictional way in order to implement and enforce federal regulations on clean air, clean water, endangered species, and other areas. When you start throwing a federal tribal entity into this, you now have a third sovereign. The only difference is that the tribes are considered, in many cases, to predate the U.S. Constitution. They're not subject to constitutional restrictions that states are that became part of the Union. So, you know, you have physical jurisdiction where the tribes can actually, you have physical jurisdiction over a reservation that the feds have in their name, but hold for the beneficial use of the tribes.
Right.
And then you have legal jurisdiction where the tribes can now implement for the EPA, for instance, or for the Fish and Wildlife Service, all of these environmental rules and wildlife rules, both on the reservation and up to 50 or 100 miles off the reservation, if it affects what the tribes consider their rights to clean water and clean air and pristine fish and wildlife on the reservation. So it's a way for the feds to expand their jurisdiction. You know, the waters of the U.S. is one way. Federal tribal entities and using their jurisdiction legally is another way to expand federal control over your home, your ranch, your farm.
Well, it's pretty tidy.
It's a neat concept. The feds have been really hiding behind the tribes in a way and using them, exploiting them when they want to, and then handing them gifts through U.S. taxpayer monies at other times. Billions of dollars here are going to federally recognized tribal entities. The CSKT has defense contracts worth billions of dollars. They provide military hardware for the U.S. military services. They provide military hardware for the Saudi Air Force. They provide military hardware for the Turkish military services. And South Korea, European countries, et cetera.
God. And so what do we do? I know this probably doesn't have an answer, but what do we do about this?
Well, you know, one of the issues that we've been asked to address is, you know, whether, for instance, you know, how did the tribes and the federal government get the opportunity to claim all of this jurisdiction in state boundaries? You know, when were these reservations formed? By what treaties? What did the treaties say? Who owns the land and water rights, when really every state that was once a territory that came into the Union should be on equal footing with the 13 original colonies? These are all very deep legal questions that involve extensive historical research and analysis, which is what we are currently undertaking on behalf of our clients in Montana living on the reservation.
And so they threw out your FERC.
Well, they didn't throw out the FERC.
Did they throw out
the FERC?
Throw
is another
out?
Matter. Okay, the lawsuit we filed in Washington, D.C. was to try to seek an emergency temporary restraining order to stop the dam from transferred to the tribes.
Right.
The first time in U.S. history that a major dam that could start up by itself without the energy grid because it's hydroelectric, and that could, if breached, you know, end with more than 8,000 and with a number of many thousands of people dying. That was the first time in American history that such a dam was transferred to a tribal entity. And the dam itself is probably owned by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Trust for the tribes. So there is the ostensible reality that the government's watching over them. The problem is the Bureau of Indian Affairs is one of the most notoriously incompetent agencies in the federal bureaucracy.
That really says a lot.
Okay, but now this FERC process is another process, because in that Kerr Dam license, there's many different articles that govern how the operator of the dam is supposed to undertake its affairs in managing and operating the dam. One of those had to deal with, you know, what the function of the dam was in connection with the reservation. That dam was originally intended to electrify the whole reservation and then have the power thereafter be wheeled, distributed, transmitted outside the reservation. Apparently, over the course of the last 30 years, the federal government has reallocated the dam's obligation to the reservation, and most of the power is not given to the reservation, but rather it's given to transmitters, to companies that transmit it outside the reservation. One of them is Bonneville Power. Bonneville Power is a U.S. government agency, and it provides some discounted electricity back to the reservation. Actually, 80% of the reservation's energy mix is due to Bonneville Power transmission. Only 19% is due to Kerr Dam, which is now managed by the tribe under their subsidiary, Energy Keepers, Inc. And we were able to find a transmission agreement between Energy Keepers, Inc. and Northwestern Energy, which is the former licensee to the dam. And it shows exactly how they, you know, the amount of megawatt power that the dam sends into the reservation that's then transmitted by a federal government power company called Mission Valley Power. So you can see the federal government's got their hands in everything on the Flathead Indian Reservation. They essentially hold the dam in trust for the tribes.
Right.
They transmit the electricity around the reservation through Mission Valley Power. And by the way, they also control the irrigation systems now. A very complex plumbing's work that was created back in the early 20th century to irrigate what would otherwise be arid lands on the reservation. The ranchers and farmers who bought into the reservation due to statutes that Congress enacted, the laws that Congress enacted in the late 1800s and the early 1900s to draw in settlers so that foreign powers would not come in and take over the Montana Territory, brought all these people in, and they were told that they would get irrigation and they'd have to pay for it. But once they paid it all up, you know, the irrigation system would be theirs to manage and operate. The dam would be theirs to manage and operate. Unfortunately, the government changed the deal. Now they manage and operate the irrigation system. They manage and operate indirectly the dam, and they manage and indirectly operate the transmitting electrical company that, gives you your electric bill out there. It's almost like a monopoly.
Yeah, almost exactly like
But the feds can get away with running monopolies, unlike the private sector, it seems.
Yeah.
But this FERC ordeal has to do with how much power the tribes are obligated under the license to provide to the reservation, and at what cost. So there was a the license provision for this provided for a public hearing to renegotiate that once the dam was transferred to the tribes. And this was supposed to be a public hearing that people in the public space could see and listen to and have a voice in. Unfortunately, FERC decided in their imminent imminent wisdom to take this public process and put it underground through settlement conference proceedings. And the parties to the settlement conference proceedings would be the irrigation districts on the reservation, the Department of Interior, and the tribes. And interestingly, we were asked by some of our clients who are members of the irrigation districts to intervene in this process because they believe that the irrigation district on the Flathead Indian Reservation, known as the Flathead Joint Board of Control, which is a public benefit corporation formed by the different irrigation districts, which are also public benefit corporations under Montana state law, to represent all the district members. Unfortunately, they were not very open with their own membership, and they to deceive their membership as to what really is being discussed here.
Not helpful.
So we were asked to intervene in that FERC process. It's an administrative process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC.
At every
twist and turn, they kept on pushing us out. The tribes didn't want us in there. The irrigators, the irrigation district, the Flathead Joint Board of Control didn't want us in there.
It sounds like
if you go to their website, they don't even put anything on their website. Even though they're a public benefit corporation, they don't serve the public interest. They serve their own interests, it appears.
That's kind of handy. Hey, you know what? We need to take a quick break, but while we're doing that, would you mind calling us back? Because the line just got really fuzzy. It's like we have a snowstorm between us. We probably do.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we're going to be back with Larry Kogan. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
She's a Chippewa, she's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. The village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. And pass it around. Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw.
Oh, Bob. No, you're the one of a kind. Where'd you find that one?
That was actually Tim McGraw's first hit back in the early 90s.
And then he's buried it then because it's politically incorrect.
I'm not sure he still does it in concert.
He's probably going to just lie about that.
That never happened.
Nice. Yeah, really. That was back in the bad old days. He must have been channeling Donald Trump. Oh my gosh. So, okay, Mr. Kogan, back to our, hey, you know, we should tell people too, for the folks that don't follow some of this stuff. I forget sometimes that everybody isn't embroiled in all this. But we keep talking about FERC. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And they're the guys who are in charge of licensing, dams. So, if they won't relicense your dam, then you're screwed. Plus or minus. You've run up against them. Have you done stuff with FERC before? I'm assuming.
Well, you know, we were dealing with FERC, not actually before we started doing the work with the reservation. See, FERC's role in dam licensing on a reservation is different than its role when it deals with dams that have no relationship to a reservation. And when you're dealing with a reservation, FERC is subject to override by the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which seems to be the manager of everything on the reservation, including the dam. So the licenses read differently. And you end up stepping into an Alice in Wonderland reality then.
Again.
Yes, I mean, it was just like the presentation I had made up in Kalispell, Montana in September. My presentation was entitled Barack in Wonderland, dealing with federal Indian policy under President Obama and how he's put it into high gear on steroids.
Yeah, what has been the change? Like, give us a little snapshot of what it was like before he showed up.
Well, President Nixon had his own secret agenda as to what he wanted to use federal Indian policy for. You know, and I'm not the authority on this, but there is at least one other attorney who is the authority on this that I've learned from very rapidly over the last several months, based on the disclosure of old documents from the 1970s that have been unearthed on college campus archives out in California. And essentially, he wanted to use federal Indian policy as a way to keep war powers clause of the U.S. Constitution open endlessly. So that the feds can assert all types of authority to curtail everybody's constitutional rights. It's a pretense for a major federal government power play. And you can see that also being used during, you know, following 9/11. If we're in a constant war, then the government has all types of authorities that they can exercise at the expense of American citizens' civil liberties.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the game. Keep everything perpetual, therefore the government can just do what it wants and change the dynamic of the government itself and the private property rights that we all think we have.
And how much of it, I know you know, unless you had a bird's eye view of the whole, you know, universe, you can't really know this definitively, but how much of this is manipulation of the tribes and how much of this, it, just in what you've dealt with, is tribes kind of taking advantage?
It's both. There's a symbiosis here. The tribes try to get what they can get. The CSKT, for instance, seeks to reclaim all of its territory prior to the Hellgate Treaty of 1855. And that could be accomplished through the federal authorities that are bestowed upon it through this tribal sovereignty regime. So what they physically don't have jurisdiction of, they'll take legal jurisdiction of through implementation of federal environmental and wildlife laws. They will curtail what you and I can do beyond 100 miles from the reservation if the water and the air and the animals can be harmed by your activities.
Well, and up in Oregon, it has nothing to do with their Aboriginal land, they've gotten a administrative law judge to say that they have time immemorial water rights.
Well, that, you know, and they say the same thing in Montana. Time immemorial means from, you know, back to the beginning of time.
Predates Jesus and everybody else.
They're primordial, okay?
So,
in a way.
So, you know, since you're an attorney, maybe you can decipher that little thing for us. When an administrative law judge makes a rule like that, does that mean that they actually do have control over all the water right now, or does more have to be done?
Well, they have certain rights to, for instance, in-stream flow, okay, with the rivers and tributaries flowing into the reservation, okay, because essentially prior to this, the Indian treaties being signed, they weren't restricted as to where they can go and what they can do on all their territories. So the way courts and federal agencies have been construing the Indian treaties over the last 50, 60, almost 100 years is to interpret the treaties in the light most favorable to the tribes. What would they have thought this treaty allowed them or prohibited them from doing? And with that type of interpretation comes all these permissive permitted activities that the tribes can undertake consistent with their aboriginal rights. Now, nobody's even paying attention to what the state and its citizens' rights are, because when the reservation is formed, the feds assert immediate jurisdiction and control over that space.
Sure.
On behalf of the tribes. Now, that's not also to say that the feds have their own Federal Reserve rights, such as national forests and monuments, etc., that dovetail with the reservation. So you can really build, you can see how federal jurisdiction can build out, and the tribes can use that jurisdiction to their own benefit at the expense of state citizens and their property rights.
Yeah, you know what? That is, and that just doesn't help any of it, because we already have all these, you know, the environmentalists versus the irrigators, and
well, that's where the environmentalists come in and they help the tribes out when it's to their interest. Except when you get different fish, I mean, you could have a fish fight, essentially, which has happened along the Columbia River, where you have the upstream tribe fighting the downstream tribe that's trying to protect the ocean salmon versus the upstream tribe trying to protect their rights to the freshwater fish. And that's all about when the waters are supposed to flow through the dams and not be held by the reservoirs. Because if you allow more water to flow through, the water stays colder and the fish are more comfortable. You don't make them anxious. You know, I don't know about you, but whenever I eat my fish, I can't tell whether they're anxious or calm.
Yeah, no, me either. They look the same mostly all the time. I don't know where. I mean, at the end of the day, how much of this can be reeled, you know, realistically reeled back in, that's happened during the Obama years?
Well, a lot of this is based on science that doesn't make any empirical
That's
sense.
True. We haven't even gotten to the fake science. You're right.
Okay. So, yes, there is a tool out there in federal law, and it's called the Information Quality Act, which requires federal agencies to ensure that the science that they use and put out to the public space and then rely upon later in regulations that are issued by the same agency or another agency are grounded in empirical science that can be reproduced, validated, assessed objectively, are peer-reviewed in a way that shows that there are objective people with divergent views that have been selected by the organizers of the peer review process. And these are tools that can be used to argue against rules such as the forest cutback rule, which has affected many acres of farmland and ranchland and forest. It can be used to refute the science that Fish and Wildlife Service puts out there in defense of this historical age of the forest, which their rules seem to be based on nonsense, not on real science.
Sure.
That rule basically allowed the spotted owl preservation to devastate the ranching and farming communities on the West Coast.
Well, it also devastated spotted owls, so it was kind of a lose-lose proposition.
Right, and then you've got rules that are out there trying to protect the fish, and they claim without adequate science that is not empirical and has not been properly peer-reviewed that there are certain fish that are indigenous to certain areas that history shows never existed there.
Yeah, except
it's like,
we
wolves in Northern California and say, oh, because of our preservation, the wolves have reappeared miraculously.
Yeah, big surprise, huh? Yeah, we were shocked.
Well, so are the people with cattle. They're shocked, too.
Yeah, well,
and with little children.
For the people who think this, it's like, wow, it sucks to be you guys, because I guess that's what I'd be thinking if I didn't live out here. The thing is, all this affects your food prices. Bottom line, if you
eat, it affects your food prices. It affects your electric prices.
Yep.
I mean, you've got Warren Buffett, who's got four dams along the Klamath River they want to shut down, and he's willing to play along because he's getting paid off. He can pipe in his solar panels out of Nevada or his windmill power out of other states out west in lieu of the dams that serve the irrigators. And the tribes and the environmentalists are in favor of taking down the dams so that the fish can flow and the water stays cool and they're not anxious, and I guess you have a taste of your meal.
Yeah, except none of that makes any sense because all those things won't happen, only in an imaginary world. We have to take a really quick break here in the real world before I blow a gasket about stupid fish. I tell you what, I never thought as an adult I'd grow up and just talk trash about fish.
Well, there are trash fish.
It seems like a strange place to end up. Anyway, you are listening to We the People Radio. Oh, one of our favorites. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Pull yourself together. No use crying forever.
Way too many fish in the sea. Should have killed them all. We wouldn't have to save them then. We could just eat beef. How's that? Oh, I'd make a great conservationist.
Half of them are radioactive now anyway.
Yeah, that's true. So don't eat the ones that glow in the dark. All right, what have we missed, Mr. Kogan? We've got like five-ish minutes or so.
What else do folks need to know? Is quite disturbing in small communities is how there are certain outsiders that come in and embed themselves in as part of the community, and then they divide and conquer in order to preserve their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their agenda is to work the federal angle.
Yeah,
and
that's
this is something that we've noted in Montana.
Well, I'm kind of hoping we get to, I hope everything goes according to Hoyle next week, and we get to talk about one of those folks, Dr. Kate Vandermoor. Have you actually met her in your travels over there?
I've spoken on the phone with her once. She never wants to meet me because she's always darting in and out of rooms if she sees me speaking, or she always tries to avert her gaze if I look over at her. I don't know why, because when you are able to read people, you get to see that either they're honest or they're not.
Yeah. Well, so, I was reading all this information about her that we had gotten from our friend next week, and as I'm reading along, it's like she does a conservative radio show, and it's just like, wow.
But what she's done is she's
really?
marshaled the trust and confidence of longtime residents of the Flathead Reservation and even up in North Kalispell where the pseudo-intellectuals reside. And they believe that she is some well-endowed intellectual hydrologist brainchild who was there to save them from the evils of the tribes, and at the same time of some other folk that don't agree with her. And it just strikes me as odd and disingenuous considering my work in Washington. I've noticed a lot of people over the years, and this person doesn't seem to be who she says she is, and she has marshaled the support of a community that is not necessarily cosmopolitan in any way. and they don't necessarily read, and they believe. They believe in neighborly relationships, and because she has, quote-unquote, worked hard, ostensibly for them, they wish to defend her at all costs. So she knows how to pit neighbor against neighbor when some people disagree with her. And she has a sidekick that does her PR for her. So she's a spinmeister for Dr. Kate.
Oh, well, that's nice. Yeah, because, you know, when you start looking at this, maybe I just deal with too many agencies, but when she was at the Bureau of Indian Affairs, she promoted and enhanced tribal self-governance, self-determination, and sovereignty. Now, that seems nice.
Well, you know, that's what I read on your website. I was amazed by how extensive her knowledge of federal government bureaucracy is, and how, especially the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and how it operates.
Yeah, well, she worked in. I just lost it. I touched this and it jumped. Here we go. She worked primarily in the Department of the Interior and Bureau of Indian Affairs, and she'd also been assigned temporarily. And this is where it's like. Boop, boop, boop. Danger, Will Robinson, right? She's been assigned temporarily to EPA and NOAA's Columbia River Basin Unit. It's like, uh-oh. Because if she's palling around with EPA and NOAA and a lot of...
I got to tell you, whoever gave you that information is a blessing in disguise, I have to tell you.
Well, I hope people read it, because I just got... I got a thing from a guy that's... been kind of a dope, but anyway. And he was promoting her... he was promoting a radio thing that she does as a constitutional. She's pretending to be a constitutional. I don't know what do you call her? No, she's like a. God, what's an? Hold on here. I got to look down at the bottom of this.
You know, I would
thing.
Know. All I know about her is what she has been doing involving the tribal water compact that was.
Here we
put
go.
Through the Montana legislature and signed by the state into law, and that the tribe has approved, and now that they're waiting for Congress to ratify. And Congressman Zinke sponsoring that compact as well.
Well, see, it's crazy because somebody with a lot of history under the Clinton and Babbitt administration, which is pretty much where everything went to hell in a handbag, here she is. She's doing Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. It's right on our page here. I just couldn't get there fast enough. Revolution Radio is a place where patriots meet twice a week to discuss strategies for the restoration of our constitutional republic. Well, I'm thinking if you're advancing the Clinton and Babbitt program through Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs, NOAA, and EPA, what do you know about a constitutional republic?
Well, you know, I've spoken to Montana legislators about this, and they've been drinking her Kool-Aid.
Well, obviously, because if she's still up there, I'm just waiting for her to pop up in the Klamath thing. And
well, I read on your website that she was there already.
Well, she's already been there, but I'm waiting for her to come back because things are kind of heating up. And, you know, if she has this much free time and can embed herself as into communities and can pretend she's a conservative, I think people ought to know who she is because she, we kind of titled her the Lady Operator, and I think she is an operator. So, anyway, I know you're a busy guy. Maybe you can listen next week and connect the dots for the stuff you're working on in Montana.
Well, listen, Aaron, I thank you and your station for putting out really quality broadcasts and for putting good information out there that irrigators along the West Coast and in the Northwest should be taking a very close look at.
Yep, hopefully we can...
To protect their rights before they lose their rights.
Exactly. Hopefully we'll have the Montana guys drill into this a little bit before they are lost. Thank you, Mr. Coben.
But I imagine your guest next week will help you do that.
I think so, too. Just in brief conversation, I'm kind of excited about it. All right, we're coming back with Trevor Loudon, spicy guy from New Zealand. You're going to enjoy it. Thank you, Mr. Coben. Have a great week.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for having me back.
Have a great Thanksgiving. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.